especially in healthcare, the type of reimbursement model that you work under will influence what your employers expect from you, how you are expected to perform, how you're expected to bill. It impacts how you might determine your plan of care. Really, it can be summed up that the way you are expected to perform your job is largely influenced by the way in which your services are reimbursed or paid for. And just like in other scenarios in life, once you understand what the incentive structures are, you are then able to respond accordingly and work better within that incentive structure.
Hi, I'm Clarice Grody, and welcome to the Amplify OT podcast. I'm an occupational therapist by trade and a policy wonk by choice. This podcast is here to help you survive and thrive in the U.S. healthcare system through a better understanding of policy, advocacy, and value-based care. So, let's dive in.
Hello, OT Amplifiers, and welcome back to the Amplify OT podcast. Today, we are talking all about reimbursement models. I know, thrilling, but stick with me. In healthcare and in business in general, there are different ways of incentivizing behavior based on how we are reimbursed. And this is not just exclusive to healthcare, but it's something that obviously we're going to focus on because this is the Amplify OT podcast. But also, especially in healthcare, the type of reimbursement model that you work under will influence what your employers expect from you, how you are expected to perform, how you're expected to bill. It impacts how you might determine your plan of care. Really, it can be summed up that the way you are expected to perform your job is largely influenced by the way in which your services are reimbursed or paid for. And just like in other scenarios in life, once you understand what the incentive structures are, you are then able to respond accordingly and work better within that incentive structure. At its most basic form, it's positive and negative reinforcement, but using money. And this is one of the main ways in which typically governments are able to influence behavior, which is what a policy is. A policy is an effort to influence someone's behavior through positive or negative reinforcements. And one of the main ways that they do that is through money. So if you do X, Y, or Z, you get paid. If you don't do X, Y, or Z, then you don't get paid. So there's two primary categories of reimbursement models, and that is volume-based care and value-based care, which you may be familiar with those terms. And then in this episode, we're going to kind of talk about three primary reimbursement models that fall underneath value and volume-based care. And this is intended to kind of give you an overview and introduction. If you're wanting to take this kind of information that one step further of, okay, now you know what kind of system you're working within, but how do I use that to my advantage, right? How do I use that policy to work for me versus against me? That's more of what I talk about in the Mastering OT Policy course, which is in the Amplify OT membership. And again, there's links to join that in the bio. I also have a blog on this, so especially if you are someone who prefers to read something in addition to listening to something, I have that blog linked also in the show notes. So let's go ahead and get started. So up until somewhat recently, the U.S. healthcare system has been predominantly a volume-based system, meaning that payment structures are incentivized or are set up in a way to incentivize providing a lot of services in order to make more money. Hence the volume portion of that. Kind of in the early 2000s, people started talking about a value-based care and what that might look like, which is when we kind of came up with things like the triple aim, the quadruple aim, and eventually we saw the U.S. healthcare system make a pretty significant shift towards thinking about value-based care in a serious way with the passage of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare in 2010. And that's what really took policy and our healthcare system from much more of a reactive model, so that volume-based care, to a more proactive care model or value-based, where instead of waiting for people to get sick and providing them with services, we're now trying to help them stay healthier so they don't need as many costly healthcare services. Now, as we get talking about the specifics, keep in mind that the three payment models I'm going to bring up, which are fee-for-service, capitated payment models, and bundled payment models, are kind of overarching ideas of how payment works, oftentimes what we see now is a kind of mishmash of these different models. So there might be a capitated element with a bundled element, or there might be a fee-for-service element built into that capitated element, or there might be like different levels of payment, right? And this is where healthcare is so fun. A primary example of something mishmashing together is that CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, provides a capitated payment to Medicare Advantage plans for the patients that they're managing. But then it's up to the Medicare Advantage plans to decide how to pay for services. So even though Medicare Advantage is kind of a capitated payment model, same thing with managed Medicaid programs, they are then able to decide if they want to use fee-for-service programs to actually pay for the services, or if they also want to do something more value-based. Hopefully that hasn't already gotten us off to a rough start, but I just want you to kind of remember that these are overarching ideas around how these reimbursement models work, and many of them kind of flow together and have elements of each of them in kind of how we actually end up getting paid. So we'll start with the one that most people are familiar with, which is a fee-for-service payment model. And it's exactly as it sounds. You are getting paid a fee per service that you are providing. And this is a volume-based payment model. Now, fee-for-service is still one of our most prominent payment models, especially when we're dealing with outpatient and some commercial insurers. And that's where when you're billing like CPT codes. So if you get reimbursed based on the CPT code that you're billing, that is a fee-for-service model, because depending on which code you pick and how many of those codes you provide, it influences how much you get paid. But again, keep in mind, there are many settings such as like SNF or an acute care where you still may be selecting CPT codes, but you aren't actually getting paid that way. Like that claim isn't actually being submitted. So that is what can make CPT codes a little bit confusing, is that sometimes we're using them actually for claims like Medicare Part B, especially in outpatient services. But for skilled nursing facilities, if you're billing Medicare Part A, you're not actually getting paid based on those CPT codes. They're being used instead more as like a productivity tool and also just kind of to keep a consistency between different payer types and whatnot, so clinicians don't have to think as much between what different payers are. And I kind of talk about that whole scenario and claims and when we're submitting them in Module 3 of Mastering OT Policy and Medicare in the Amplify OT membership. Back to fee-for-service. The best way that I like to think of fee-for-service is like going to a grocery store. The incentive is for a grocery store to sell you as many items as possible. So the more items you buy, the more money the grocery store makes. And it works the same way in healthcare. The longer your visit or the more times you see a patient, the more money you make because you are receiving a separate fee per service that you provided. And this is considered a volume-based payment model because there is not really any kind of financial incentive for you not to provide something beyond your own clinical reasoning or ethics. So when this was really the predominant payment model, especially in hospitals and in primary care, this is what incentivized a redundancy. So where you would go to your primary care doctor and they'd run a blood test, and then you'd go to your cardiologist and they would run the exact same blood test. And maybe then you go to a urologist and they run the blood tests again, right? So instead of just sharing the results of that initial blood test, all three places are running a test because they were getting paid separately for each one of those tests. So there was no incentive to try and look to see if you'd had that test done before. And so this is part of what drove up costs of healthcare in the United States. And this kind of model also incentivizes utilizing the most expensive service. Now, you may notice when you go in to receive care or when you're working with a patient, the doctor will often want to complete an x-ray potentially before they do an MRI. And the reason for that is that the x-ray is cheaper. So you start with the cheaper item and then you try a more expensive item. Well, under fee-for-service, the incentive was not only to go straight to the MRI, but to do both. And as a clinician, you might figure, why not do both when, you know, it's more efficient, let's say, right? It's not going to take as much time, so maybe I get the answer first. And if insurance is going to pay for both of them, then at least we've covered our bases, right? So this wasn't necessarily always clinicians behaving in an unethical manner, but it's just the way the reimbursement system was set up that it wasn't going to force you to think twice about ordering all of these different services. So to summarize, fee-for-service, similar to going to a grocery store, where the incentive is for you to buy as many items as possible and ideally the most expensive item. So in healthcare, this is where the more that you bill, the more money that you receive, right? You're going to make more money if you see a patient three times than if you only see them twice because it is fees for service. So this volume-based payment model incentivizes a larger volume of care without necessarily incentivizing clinicians to stop and think about whether or not what they're doing is providing the highest value for the amount that the insurance or the patient is paying. And Medicare Part B, or your outpatient settings, tend to be the best example of a kind of full-on fee-for-service payment model. Former payment models that are another example of volume-based care were our RUG levels, and then also like the therapy utilization visits in home health. And right after this quick break, we will talk about value-based care, which tends to be the more common reimbursement models that we have in post-acute care.
Are you ready to take your occupational therapy practice to the next level? Then look no further than the Amplify OT membership. You heard that right. Amplify OT has its very own membership program. This membership is designed to help occupational therapy practitioners just like you stay informed about the latest developments in Medicare and advocacy. You will have exclusive access to resources, webinars, the Mastering OT Policy and Medicare course, Q&A sessions, plus the ability to DM me your questions and get answers fast. But of course, that is not all. As a member, you'll be part of a community of like-minded occupational therapy practitioners who share their expertise and offer support. So by joining the Amplify OT membership, you'll be able to stay up to date on the latest Medicare regulations and guidelines, learn how to advocate for your patients and your profession, connect with other OT practitioners and students to share your knowledge, and you'll have access to those exclusive resources and webinars so you can reach your full potential as an OT provider. So don't miss out on this opportunity to take your practice to the next level. Sign up for the Amplify OT membership today by going to the link in the show notes or amplifyot.com/membership. Don't forget to stay informed and be the change that you want to see in our healthcare system. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by MedBridge, your go-to resource for advancing your occupational therapy career and, of course, getting those necessary CEUs. If you are passionate about staying at the forefront of our field and enhancing your skills, MedBridge is a comprehensive solution. With the MedBridge subscription, you gain access to an extensive library of high-quality live and recorded courses led by industry experts. So stay up to date with the latest advancements in occupational therapy, explore evidence-based practice, and enhance your clinical skills. One reason that I really like and recommend MedBridge is because they have both intervention-based courses and policy and reimbursement-based courses, and that is a rare find in a CEU company. But here's the best part for our OT Amplifiers community. If you use the promo code AMPLIFYOT at checkout, you'll unlock an exclusive 40% discount on your MedBridge subscription. Yes, you heard that right, 40% off with the code AMPLIFYOT, that's AMPLIFYOT. This is a fantastic opportunity to save some money, elevate your practice, and support Amplify OT. So don't miss out on this chance to supercharge your professional development and head over to MedBridge.com, use the promo code AMPLIFYOT, and enjoy the benefits of MedBridge while also supporting Amplify OT and all the free resources that we produce here, like this podcast. So again, head to MedBridge.com, use the code AMPLIFYOT at checkout, and we also have the link for you in the show notes. Value-based care. Again, just like the name sounds, this is to try and incentivize providing a value instead of a volume of care. So really thinking about this concept of the right patient receiving the right care at the right time. Instead of throwing spaghetti at the walls and hoping something sticks and ordering six different blood panels, they're maybe only going to order one that they think may give us the best results. And this kind of thinking about how we provide care has led practitioners into thinking a little bit differently about how they might do their schedules or their plan of care. So like from a therapy perspective, instead of just going ahead and doing three times a week for 8 weeks, we might start with three times a week for 2 weeks and then two times a week for 4 weeks,
you know, kind of titrating it down and really thinking about when is the right time to get a patient access to these services. Or instead of starting all therapies at the same time, maybe OT starts and then PT comes in, or PT starts and then OT comes in, because it's more about getting that right care at the right time and thinking about when is the patient going to get the most out of this service. And one thing I want you to keep in mind with value-based care, it does tend to get a bad rap because of how it has forced us to change the way that we think about therapy. But there are actually a lot of opportunities for occupational therapy within value-based care, because a lot of value-based care models really incentivize focusing on outcomes around function, around mobility, safety at home, reducing falls. All of those things have a strong role for occupational therapy. So this is why, if we understand the incentive structures that we are working within, we can better advocate for ourselves, for our patients, for our profession, because there are actually a lot of incentives set up within these reimbursement structures that align with the services that OT practitioners provide. Now, there are some downsides to value-based care. For example, value-based care has led to some consolidation amongst like hospitals and primary care offices or doctor's offices. So you see people kind of forming in these groups because it's easier to share information when you all work for the same person. But when there's consolidation, that can drive down competition, which then can drive up prices. So there are some downsides of value-based care, just like there are downsides of volume-based care. But value-based care has really had a lot of positives, especially in getting patients access to the care they need, focusing on chronic disease management, focusing on safety, keeping people out of the hospital, reducing hospital readmissions. All of those kinds of things are a lot of the benefits of value-based care. Under value-based care, we are going to talk about two payment models that kind of make up the majority of value-based care models, and they are bundled payment models and capitated payment models. So both capitated and bundled payment models operate in a similar way in which the amount of money you receive does not get adjusted based on the number of services you provide. Now, I don't always like to say that's an absolute. There are definitely some intricacies and things that can adjust payment, but generally speaking, under a capitated and a bundled payment model, the practitioner or the group receives one payment, and that is how much you make no matter if you see the patient one time or 100 times. And when you're only going to receive that one payment and it isn't going to adjust, you can see how that then incentivizes practitioners to think critically about what service is both high value but inexpensive, right? And it's a balancing act. You can't cut costs so much that then the quality goes down. But there is a fair amount of room to be able to cut costs and actually be able to increase quality, or at least have them balancing out, because there is definitely not a direct relationship where more services equals better outcomes, right? Like, more therapy does not always equal getting better or better outcomes. At times, having more services or more therapy can actually lead to worse outcomes. So let's start with capitated payment models, because I think it's one of the easiest, in a sense, to conceptualize. But I also want to make sure we spend more time on bundled payment models, because that's the one we deal with the most. Capitated payment models are fairly prevalent, but in terms of the therapy perspective, they aren't necessarily the ones that we tend to deal with directly the most. This is changing. So with new reimbursement models like the GUIDE model, which is for dementia, that's a capitated payment model. There's a primary care capitated payment model. Accountable care organizations are capitated payment models. So there are ways that these models impact OT and may include OT. But in terms of kind of our day-to-day practice for the general practitioner, you're most likely not dealing directly with a capitated payment model in the way that impacts your billing or services. A capitated payment model is when you receive one payment per person that is part of that program or part of your caseload. So this takes us back to that example of Medicare and Medicare Advantage earlier in the episode, where Medicare Advantage has a certain number of enrollees. Let's say they have 100 enrollees in their plan. Medicare, or the government, will pay Medicare Advantage plans a certain amount per month in order to cover the costs of care for every individual that's enrolled in that program. So if CMS was going to pay $10 per person enrolled in that program per month, then the Medicare Advantage plan would receive $1,000 to cover the services for those 100 patients. And if they spend over $1,000 that month, Medicare doesn't give them any more money. But if they spend under $1,000 that month, they get to keep that money. So although there is an incentive here to reduce spending and cut access to services, there is also an incentive to make sure that patients have access to services that are less expensive than the potential consequence of not receiving that service. So a prime example for OT is that occupational therapy services are less expensive than a hip replacement after a fall. So buying the tub bench is cheaper than paying for the hip replacement. So a Medicare Advantage plan or another type of plan that's a capitated payment model may decide to go ahead and pay for that tub transfer bench in order to reduce the risk of that patient having a fall and incurring costly expenses, because it's cheaper to pay the $100 for the tub bench and maybe, let's say, $1,000 for OT visits than it is to pay $30,000 for the surgery and then pay for the skilled nursing facility and then home health and yada, 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 right? So this is why it's important to understand how you are being paid for your services or how your facility or the insurer is being paid for those services so that you can justify why they should spend money on you or on occupational therapy instead of spending money somewhere else. So the easiest way to kind of think about a capitated model is like a gym membership. Let's say you are a gym member at Planet Fitness and you pay a monthly fee to that gym no matter how often you go. So you pay the same $25 a month, regardless of if you go once or if you go every day. So again, this isn't something that OT practitioners tend to interact with directly of that capitated payment model. Instead, it's something that kind of more impacts how we practice, but that is changing. Like the guide model and some primary care models are capitated payment models and can include occupational therapy practitioners. And if you want to talk more about what that looks like or to try and figure out how you might advocate for yourself in that space, then that's definitely a great conversation to have in the Amplify OT membership. Okay, last but not least, bundled payment models. Bundled payment models are kind of the most prevalent payment model that you are dealing with if you work in post-acute care. Bundled payment models operate similarly, in a sense, to capitated payment models in which there is kind of just one payment. But instead of it being like an ongoing payment per month to kind of manage a care, it is a kind of one lump sum payment to manage that specific episode of care. And again, this is kind of an overarching idea of understanding payment models, because like if we take PDPM, for example, it is a variable per diem payment, technically, because there's a payment per day. And again, I get into the technicalities of that in module 2 of Amplify OT membership, but it functions like a bundled payment model in where there is kind of one lump payment based on patient factors, and then it's up to the skilled nursing facility to essentially decide how they're going to spend that money. So that is why in skilled nursing facilities, we have seen an increasing presence of like walking techs or exercise techs or someone like that. So services that were not traditionally reimbursed or paid for under like Medicare, but because it's this lump sum, it opens up opportunities to use that money in a different way to provide different services that may not necessarily be traditionally covered, but are still beneficial to the patient and may be less expensive than a different service. Kind of the best comparison that I can think of when it comes to bundled payment models to an extent is kind of like getting your paycheck, right? So you are paid a certain amount of money and it's to cover your living expenses. So you have to spend that money on some things that are necessities, right? Like you have to buy food to eat, you have to pay your rent or your home, your mortgage, you have to pay for electricity, water, right? You have to spend that money. But then it's up to you how you want to spend the rest of it. Do you want to spend it on going to the movies, or do you want to spend it on a new t-shirt, whatever it may be. And the idea is that some months you may spend less money than your paycheck, so you should save money. And other months you may spend more, but it's okay because you spent less another month. So it's kind of the same thing with these bundled payment models, where the idea is that they are kind of an average of the cost of those services of that episode of care. So one of the most common and kind of one of the first bundled payment models that was rolled out from CMS is the Comprehensive Joint Replacement Program, or the CJR. And this is kind of a true bundled payment model where for total knees and total hips, the hospital or the surgeon receives one lump sum amount of money to cover the patient's care, including their hospital stay and any care that is received in the 90 days after the surgery. So that's where this is a bundled payment for an episode of care. So not only the surgery, but the following care, versus something like the capitated payment model, where you're receiving a certain amount of money each month to manage that patient's ongoing health. So capitated payments are much more prevalent in kind of your primary care, preventative care space, versus bundled payment models are much more prevalent in kind of your reactive care or rehab. And the implementation of these value-based care models or bundled care models is why we no longer see patients after a total knee replacement staying in the hospital for 2 months. It's why surgeons aren't referring to therapy as often after a total hip replacement. It's why they're trying to not use skilled nursing facilities, but instead use outpatient for knee replacements. That is because of the comprehensive joint replacement model, or these kind of bundled payment models that are supposed to cover the surgery and the cost of care afterwards. So yes, you are going to have some patients that need those services, but if you have played your cards right and managed your patients well, you should be okay, because most of your patients will cost either as much as you received in the bundled payment model or less than what you received under the bundled payment model. Other examples of bundled payment models tends to be your DRGs in acute care, PDPM, PDGM. Again, like PDPM and PDGM are technically not considered a full bundled payment, but they kind of operate similarly to a bundled payment in terms of the concept of like a lump sum of payment to cover that plan of care. And then in inpatient rehab, you kind of have an odd combination of a lump sum payment, but then there's kind of that fee for service element where it's required of 3 hours of therapy 5 days a week or 15 hours of therapy across 7 days. There are other examples of kind of true bundled payment models, and you can find those often on CMMI's website or the Innovation Center. But CJR is one that we are going to come in touch with the most as occupational therapy practitioners. So again, switching to a bundled payment model does change the way that people see the role of therapy. A prime example of this is switching from RUGs to PDPM, or the patient-driven payment model, in skilled nursing facilities. RUG levels were much more of a volume-based reimbursement model where the more therapy that was provided, the more money the skilled nursing facility made. Now, under PDPM, that is definitely not the case. We are seen as a direct cost instead of a revenue driver. And I talk more about that in the PDPM episode that was on the Amplify OT podcast. And again, I really kind of get into these intricacies of how that impacts your daily practice in the Mastering OT Policy course. And I promise I'm not just trying to shove the Mastering OT Policy course down your throat. It's just that the Mastering OT Policy course is 6 hours of content that really provides you a lot of the context that you need in order to not just kind of have this information at your fingertips, but to be able to actually operationalize it. So to be able to actually use it in your daily life. And that's why I put that course together, because I kind of knew some of this information as a new grad, but I didn't know enough to be able to actually use it to advocate for myself. And so if I knew what I knew now when I was in the clinic, I could have much more effectively advocated for my role, for my job, for my patients than I could have then. And don't let the 6 hours worth of content scare you. It's 30, 32 lessons, something like that. And each video is really an average about 15 minutes, so even shorter than this podcast. And I do have a 14-day guarantee. So if you watch one of the lessons and you're like, this is not what I wanted it to be, then you just let me know and we work it out. And again, the link to join is in the show notes. That's the Amplify OT membership, where you gain access to that course. You have to have a full access pass to get that course. You can also sign up for a free membership, and there's a couple free courses that are included where I kind of talk a little bit more about some of the reimbursement models and those sorts of things. But if you want the Mastering OT Policy course to really kind of figure out all these different intricacies and how to operationalize them, that's what you need the full access pass for. And then you can also gain access to the community groups where I'm able to help answer questions more effectively and thoroughly than I can, like in DMs or emails. And also then you're able to hear from other practitioners and students that are also in those groups, so we can all work together to see those opportunities that exist for OT versus sometimes feeling like we're getting bogged down in the negativity that we can find in other kind of social media sites. At Amplify OT, we try to focus on the opportunities while acknowledging the barriers. And that's really what this kind of information is for. It's not to bum you out. It's to hopefully help you understand a little bit more of what your environment is. And once you understand it, you are then able to do something about it. And I don't know about you, but I'm definitely someone who the more information I have, the more in control I feel. And so knowing these kind of policy things and understanding the reimbursement models and the incentives of why I'm being asked to do something, even if I don't like why I'm being asked to do something or I don't like the thing that I was asked to do, I at least understand it a little bit better, which makes it more digestible and also gives me a better idea of an action plan of how I can either advocate for a change or recommend something be different. So all in all, this is your invitation to join me in helping build that more positive community in the Amplify OT membership, whether that's with our full access pass or with the free membership. You can also download the Amplify OT app where you can sign up for a free membership or the pass. It's currently only on Apple or iOS devices. I'm working on the Android version still. Google just has a lot more hoops to jump through, but the Amplify OT app is free and you can download that right now on the Apple App Store. Okay, so I think that's all I have for you on reimbursement models. This will probably also be a topic that I get into for the Amplify Therapy Summit. I've got a link in the show notes for that. The tickets are discounted through OT Month. So sign up now and then tickets will reopen in June. This is going to be my virtual summit and it's where we're going to talk about advocacy and some of the policies like reimbursement models that impact what we do every day as practitioners. And yes, I know it's vague, but that's because we're still working on what all the different sessions are going to be and how that's going to look. So there are student discounts as well as a discount for practitioners. So sign up before the end of April to take advantage of that. And I've got a link again for that in the show notes. And that's the Amplify Therapy Summit, which will be hosted by me, Clarice, from Amplify OT. All right. Happy OT month. Thank you so much for listening. And let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you so much for listening to the Amplify OT podcast. Hey, did you know that I have a free newsletter? Yes, that is correct. In addition to the free podcast, the free articles, I also have a free newsletter, and you can subscribe using the link in the show notes. This way, you will never miss an update. If you love this podcast, I have two requests. First, please consider leaving us a 5-star review, and second, consider leaving a gift using the link in the show notes, so that I can continue to support this podcast and provide this resource for free. Consider it a gift to your future self. And if you don't love the podcast, well, I hope you just have a fantastic day and forget I said anything about that review. Okay, folks, keep speaking out and speaking often, and I'll catch you next time.